Hello and thanks for listening to the Celtic Underground podcast, a football fans podcast, the people behind CelticUnderground.net. Goodness me, what a last 24 hours. So if you're looking for the most up-to-date information on the post-Brendan Rodgers era, this podcast isn't it. However, it is still highly relevant because it was recorded last night as I'm recording this. So it was recorded on Monday night as all the news was coming through about the departure of Brendan Rodgers, and we have quite a chat about him leaving Celtic to go to an English Premiership team. So we talk about the Motherwell game and Brendan Rodgers. This is me with him last night. So I'm now joined in the podcast by Lackey Moore. How are you doing, Lackey?
I'm very well, thank you.
How's things in Dumfries? How's the boat?
The boat's still in the water. I left it in the water this year. She comes out on St. Joseph's Day, the 19th of March, to be cleaned and a wee bit of work done on her. Then she'll go back in a bit.
St. Patrick's Day, you mean?
No, St. Joseph's Day is the 19th.
St. Patrick's Day is the 19th?
17th. No. St. Patrick's Day is the 17th.
You're right. I apologise.
Right. It's my father's birthday.
That's why my son's middle name's Patrick. It's one of the reasons. He was nearly born on St. Patrick's Day, but he came out of hospital on St. Patrick's Day.
Right. But anyway, the boat's, she's fine. I was playing golf today in glorious sunshine at Southern Est. It was very nice. Lovely down here today.
I was in North Ayrshire today, and it was lovely weather.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of that. On to the Celtic. So, did you manage to get to watch the Celtic Motherwell game at the weekend?
I was at the game, yes, with my son.
So, give me your thoughts. You were behind the big pillar.
It was right in the middle of the pitch. We could see the two goals. We were stuck behind the big pillar.
So what did you think of the team before the game started? No Scott Brown, no Callum McGregor. Brown suspended, McGregor injured.
Already. So it was no surprise. I was impressed that he went with Ewan Henderson. I thought it was quite good that he had confidence in the boy.
So, you're okay with the team?
Mm-hmm. Quite happy to see Beaton back. I like Beaton.
Uh-huh.
As you know, I've always liked Beaton. But I thought he played well.
So, how do you think the game started off?
I thought Motherwell were quite good at the start. I don't think they were fazed by playing against us, and I thought they played quite positively. Celtic had a lot of the ball, but they weren't doing anything with it. And once they got the two goals, I thought Celtic took control and looked as though they would run away with it. Eventually, they would wear them down and score three or four more, you know, two or three. But that nonsense with the goal that Motherwell got, kind of, it made the game. I honestly thought it made the game. Because I thought Celtic were quietly, you know, playing their way to a four-goal victory. They would, you know, the way they do, they tire them out and then mm-hmm. they score a couple of goals late on. But that set the place alight, and Celtic were more upset by it than Motherwell were.
Well, we'll get on to that in a second. First goal was Tierney going down the wing, pulls it back for Christie. Christie puts the cross in, Sinclair puts the ball in the back of the net. So, what's your thoughts been on Sinclair of late?
I don't know. I still think he flatters a bit in terms of his overall contribution, but he does score goals. And the goals keep him in the team. That sounds daft, but I don't think he does an awful lot apart from score goals.
Do you know what?
I don't think he works overly hard. I don't think he never seems to me that he's going to... I mean, when Lee Griffiths is playing, he works all over the park as well as scores goals. Sinclair seems to me to be like on the edge of the game, but then he scores these really good goals, and that I suppose that's the end product.
In his first season on the Celtic Underground top 10, I've had him in 5th or 6th place. Because I felt what you've just said, I actually thought there's lots of games where he's pretty anonymous, but because he scores goals, people don't really notice that. And I didn't think he was as, you know, I'm not saying he was awful, but I just didn't think he was as spectacularly game-changing as lots of people said. And I was thinking at the weekend how the big difference to me is that he was, the ball was going to him and we were losing it.
Yeah.
It wasn't that he was not creating anything. He was physically a detriment to the team. Sometimes it was like playing with 10 men in his sort of 12, 15 months of playing poorly. And I was thinking after the game on Sunday of not really noticing him apart from when he scored the goal, and then there was a couple of chances in the second half. And I thought what he's moved back to is very much to me what I thought in the first season, which is there wasn't games where he was, where you were critical of him, he was making mistakes, but he wasn't particularly fantastically running the game, but he would then score a goal. And
well, we did a podcast in that season and you asked me about him and I thought he didn't contribute much apart from the goals. He wasn't making a lot of goals, but he scored goals. But when he had that dry period when he wasn't scoring goals, I, like you, thought he was a liability, because the game stopped at him because of his lack of confidence and his uncertainty. And the ball would either go straight back to where it came from or he would lose it and we would be under pressure. But when he started to add the goals again, and he's obviously Brendan's blue-eyed boy.
Yeah.
So he's going to get a game, and as long as he's scoring goals, he'll always get a game. But there was an incident yesterday that I thought showed up his limitations. It was the one where they broke clear and Tolyan made a fantastic run from his own half to get on the outside. And if he rolls it to him, there's a chance of a goal. But he had a shot for about 25 yards that was feeble, because I don't think he was even aware that Tolyan had made the run.
Yeah.
Now, he is not Pelle, we know that. But on the way home, Andy and I were reflecting on, do you remember the fourth goal in the World Cup final? Where
yes.
Pelle throws up, and Carlos Alberto gallops into space and batters it in the corner. That was on. That very move was on. He never even saw it.
No, and I know the one you mean, and you just thought, if you just lay that off.
Well, the boy made a fantastic run. If you watch it again, he ran from his own half because he could see the space. Tolyan, and all he did is just roll it into his, you know, even Tommy Boyd talked about it in the commentary. I listened to it, I watched it this afternoon, and he said, oh, what an opportunity that was to play Tolyan in. He never even saw him. He was completely unaware of the possibility of making a goal, because all he could see was the chance to shoot.
So, anyway, he scored the goal. I mean, and I'm not being overly, critical. I'm just saying, I think he's returned to what he was doing in his first season.
Yes, and the goals matter. You know, they're important goals. That was it. The only goals, always an important goal. He didn't just add a goal at the end. I mean, there's lots of goals that, apart from the one at St. Johnson, the couple of goals that Timothy Weir scored were like the icing on the cake. You know, they finished off the win. But Sinclair scores goals when you need them.
Yes.
So I suppose that's a good thing.
So then we had the second goal, which was, I thought it was a perfect cross for a striker. He doesn't need to do too much. He just needs to get enough on it and it goes in. You know, it's whipped in.
Yeah.
Across the 6-yard box.
The pass from Boyata was sublime. Inside the fullback to the boy. And the boy's cross was brilliant.
So then we come on to the incident. So talk me through what you saw as happening through the whole thing.
Well, having watched it again, I think it's quite clear that the boy who takes the throw in, the fullback, he's just throwing it up the line.
Yeah. When you watch it again, it's fairly clear. He's just throwing it down the line.
He runs back to his position to take up a defensive position. Yeah. And that boy, there's an exchange between the boy and the manager just as the throw-in's taken. And I don't know what was said, but the boy legged off, so he did, and a goal resulted.
You see, the thing is, people are criticising the boy because he then went off. But the guy, there was also the guy who scored that didn't need to follow up and put it in the back of the net.
I know. I thought he was a good player.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll get on to him in a minute. So then, what do you think should have happened next after Motherwell scored?
I don't think the referee had any option.
He's got no option. The referee cannot do anything.
And I thought it was a wee bit unfortunate that I had completely lost the head, because it affected the way he played for the next 10 minutes. He was just lost it completely.
Oh, I actually thought I had lost it for the rest of the game.
He played a bit well towards the end.
But he was still seething. If you watched, there was a foul about 80-something minutes. And he was still arguing with Motherwell players then.
He was, I was surprised at that. I thought he'd have been one of the most cerebral players. But he wasn't. He lost it completely. But I don't really know. The idea of letting them walk into the net is fanciful.
It's happened in other games. It's happened in England. It's happened in Germany. I posted a clip on YouTube of it happening in a game in Germany.
Did it really? I've heard them say that, but Motherwell would have got a lot of kudos had they done that.
Tell me what you would do. Say we played in a Champions League game, because I'm trying to think of the disparity between the two teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
Say we played in a Champions League game against Barcelona and pulled it back to 2-1. How would you react if you saw Brendan go on and tell the players like Barcelona walk out of the park and put the ball back in it?
I wouldn't be very happy.
I mean, personally, I think that's what I think should have happened.
Possibly. I noticed someone put up a clip of Chris Sutton. Did you see it tonight?
No.
Hunting down an Arsenal player under the very same circumstances, winning a corner. The ball was kicked out. It was thrown up to the Arsenal player to get, and he hunts him down. So he's playing for Blackburn Rovers and forces the Arsenal player into conceding a corner. And the commentators are coming. They're talking about it.
I always felt in Stuttgart, you remember we were 2-0 up just before half time and then they made it 2-1? Was it 2-0 to 2-1? I always felt we'd played the ball, Rab Douglas had played the ball out of play. Because they had a player down and they took the throw in and went and scored from it. And I remember being raging at that. But the Celtic players didn't seem to be that raging. So I wondered if it was just Rab Douglas was so poor at passing the ball out from feet.
Possibly, but I have a theory about this. I think you could solve this immediately by saying if one of your players is injured and I kick it out, you should return the ball to me. If one of my players is injured and I kick it out, tough.
I mean, certainly, I also felt that the referee found it difficult to control the game from that point onwards as well.
He did.
I mean, when Tolyan was sent off in the Valencia game,
yeah,
I sent a text to a couple of people saying that in the SPL, Tolyan possibly might have got one yellow out of those two fouls.
Yes.
Possibly. But definitely wouldn't have got a red. He might have got one yellow. And my point about it was not to say that the referee was wrong in Europe or right in Europe, but how can our players domestically play one set of rules week in, week out, and then go into European football, play a completely different set of rules and not the odd game, we end up with 10 men because our players don't get it right. And I would say that there was at least 15 fouls on Saturday. Some by us. I mean, I felt Ayer was lucky to stay on the park at the beginning of the second half because he'd lost the plot. So, you know, a couple by our players, but quite a few by Motherwell players, I felt, in that game. There was about 15 challenges that were worse than Tall Jan's, than each of Tall Jan's on Thursday night, where the player didn't get booked.
I actually thought, watching it again, that Tall Jan was lucky not to be ordered off, because after he booked him,
yes,
pulled that boy down again.
Uh-huh.
Because that guy was a greyhound swaler. The American boy.
Yeah, but that's the problem.
There's no consistency.
There is consistently. Our refs in Scotland are consistently poor.
Yeah, but there's. Do you know what I mean? There's no consistency in the way they apply the rules.
No, and
guessing it as they go along.
And a point I've made many times before about the way they apply the rules to, particularly, you know, it really bugs me when we say refs are rubbish and refs are biased, and you'll get members of the press saying, "That's, you're just paranoid. That's ridiculous. It's the wee teams who get all the bad decisions." And to me, that's just the same as saying, "No, it's not Rangers who get the bad decisions. It's Celtic who get the bad decisions." That's just the same thing. I can see the argument that we sometimes get fouls at Celtic Park for little things because of the noise of the crowd, right? I can see the argument for that. But the thing that continually gets me is foul after foul after foul after foul gets committed by players and they don't get booked. And, you know, I always use the example of when we lost at Rugby Park last season and Cut Broadfoot committed the same. Kouassi committed a foul and got booked inside the first 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And Cut, when he tugged, he did what Tall Jan did, he tugged someone who'd just gone past him to stop him being cleaned through. And Cut Broadfoot did the same thing five times.
That's right, I remember that game.
And the sixth time he did it was the 88th minute and he got booked. Which is a waste of time. Because by that point he'd already committed five fouls where if he'd been booked the first time, the next four times the Celtic would have been through.
Yeah.
And one of the things I noticed, and the ref, Clancy did it on Sunday. He started booking the Motherwell. I was saying to the guy, Ronnie sits next to me, that he was talking about we struggle to cope with teams who are really physical and closes down really quickly and are quite hard in the challenge. And I was making the comment that if the referees in Scotland referee games the way that all the referees that we get in European referee games, Motherwell could only do that for the first 10 minutes. And then they would have had so many players booked that they would have to stop, and that changes the way the game is played after just 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And what they then do is they then, in the last 5 or 6 minutes, start booking players. So if you just look at the stats, it looks like, well, you can't complain because the referee ended up booking four Motherwell players. In the 89th minute when the game was already 4-1. And those fouls then, whereas if he'd done it earlier in the game, they wouldn't have played like that for the whole game.
But that's logical.
So
it requires the referee to consider the big picture of the match.
But you're right about it. The Motherwell game then created an atmosphere and created a game.
Uh-huh.
I thought it just really unsettled us, and it took us quite a while to get back into the game.
It did, but they got the crowd going. Not just the corner that was banging the drum and singing the songs, but everybody get involved then, because everybody was angry about it. I mean, I was going to see a lovely old man, and then I realised he's probably the same age as me. So this old guy was sitting next to us, and he was going on and on about it. He was even texting people about, "I've never seen any of this in my life." He was so angry about it. My viewpoint was, well, the referee had no option. There was nothing he could do about it. I thought, well, not happen again. We've learned from that, for sure.
Yeah, and there was quite a lot of drop balls in that.
And they competed for them.
And we competed for them.
I would compete for every drop ball. I don't believe in this nonsense of letting you boot it up the path.
Drop balls used to be competed for. When did it change?
referees, now, I sometimes think they'll stop an attack under some sort of spurious reason. And they used to just, the ball was booted back to your goalkeeper and they'd start again. You know? Whereas if you were deep in the other team's half when the incident occurred, that he deemed worthy of stopping the game. Now, I think you should compete with it, and then if you win it, you win it.
So, before we got into the second half, just talking about the team in general, so I'm just going to quickly go through some quickfire things. So, what do you think of Bain now being the number one goalkeeper?
I don't think he's a smashing goalkeeper. I've always thought he was a smashing goalkeeper. I remember seeing him playing against us for Dundee and thinking he was a good goalkeeper. I never anticipated him playing for Celtic, but I thought he was a good goalkeeper. And when he fell out with, I don't follow Dundee closely, but when McCann went there and I realised that Bain had been dropped and there was friction between them, I thought, I wonder what happened there. And then, of course, when he went off to the Hibs, I thought, well, they'll maybe get a chance at Hibs. And then all of a sudden he was at Celtic. But he's a good goalkeeper. And he is much calmer with the ball at his feet.
Yeah.
You know, I used to think that although there had been a discernible improvement in Craig Gordon's ability to work the ball about, not if he was under any pressure. And he did those silly wee chips. Do you know what, mm-hmm. what I mean? That were really hospital balls very often. And it was almost as if there was a petulance about them. Why are you passing this back to me when I'm closed down? Whereas he's not fazed by it. He's quite happy to take a touch and lunge. And I noticed that he had a ball, I think he tried the same the other night, he played a ball out to the wing, and the first time he did it, it went out. But the next two or three times he did it, Toljan had a really nice header onto Forrest, and a move developed out of it. So his kicking is accurate. But he makes great saves. We can see that now, he makes good saves.
So, if we move on from him, just you know, going through the sort of changes in the team, what have you made of Toljan?
I'm not wholly convinced, and yet I think he's got a lot of qualities. He's quick, he's neat, he is a good passer of the ball. I think he's got a good football brain, and he's more capable and more willing to take the ball forward than Michael Lustig is nowadays. But I thought he got a wee bit of a chasing yesterday from that winger. I thought overall he acquitted himself quite well, but he's no Danny McGrain.
No, he's not. And my slight concern, well, not my concern, I mean, I do, without sounding like someone who doesn't want transfers, because that's not what I'm saying, I do think when you consider the sort of price tag that's been talked about him is somewhere between 6 and 8 million quid.
Oh, how do you know?
No, but that's what the figure that's been talked about.
Is that right?
It does demonstrate that the market's moved on and what you get for 6-8 million quid, to be honest, from what I've seen so far, I mean, his two yellow cards against Valencia, for me, were because he was caught out.
Mm-hmm.
And he was caught out in exactly the same way that Lustig gets caught out when he's playing at that level.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I've seen, so I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, it could well be that he's just settling in. But certainly, from what I've seen to date, I'm not seeing a player that's dramatic, that we're getting anything dramatically different to what we get from Lustig.
Or Gamboa.
Well, no, he's better than Gamboa. I think every time Gamboa's played at European level, I can see why he's not first choice.
European level, I would agree, but I didn't think he played badly in the games, many of the games he played at home. He added an attacking dimension that we lost from Lustig. And neither of them are particularly good defenders. But I like the shape of the boy. I like, he's a wee bit on the small side, but he's neat. He's a nice footballer. But I don't know that he's an international class fullback.
So then we move into midfield. You've said you like Beaton, and you said you thought Henderson played well. I sent a text to someone at half time saying, "You know, you wouldn't say, well, there's a boy making his debut." I thought he had a great game.
I saw him playing down at Annan in the Iron Brew Cup, and you know the Annan team are men compared to the Celtics youth squad, which it was at the time. It wasn't a reserve team; it was a youth team, you know. And they were getting well beaten. He did not like it. He really didn't like getting beaten, and he was getting tore into some of these guys. He got booked for being overly aggressive to guys who were maybe 5-10 years older than him.
Mate,
I thought he's got an attitude. He really had an attitude.
So the other sort of disconcerting thing going into that game when you looked at it was Encham, Brown, McGregor, Rogic.
All injured
or one suspended and three injured.
Did you notice a comment that Rogers made after the game when he was asked about that, about the injury to Christie and possible or Beaton had cramp? But
yeah,
he said that's why I wanted more midfield players. And I thought, you can't have other players. You've already got too many players.
He's got a score of 34, and he's got. I mean, you know,
wanted more.
You know, pretty much people talk about, you know, two players for every position. Well, you've got Brown and Cham, McGregor and Beaton. There's four who can play a holding role. And then you've also got McGregor, Rogic, Chris, and Kouassi. Forgot about Kouassi. So there's five who can play that holding role. And then you've got McGregor, Rogic and Christie, who can play the number 10 role.
And now the boy. Now the young boy.
Yeah, Henderson. So, I mean, to be fair, I mean, there's like 8-9 players for three positions. That's three for every position. Yeah, I'm sure every manager, I mean, I remember, you know, Fergus McCann famously got fed up with Tommy Burns saying, if I just have that one extra player, everything will be fantastic. And you know, every manager always allegedly asks for extra players. So, but my concern was, no, you know, the players that we had out for that game, and then both Christie and Beaton go off injured during the game, and we've got Hearts at Tynecastle, which is always a battle in midweek. That was a concern that I had. So, we're 2-1 and we're moving towards, you know, Motherwell actually are doing really well, competing really well, and then we get Beaton injured, and then, so with Beaton's injury we have to bring Henry, because we've got no midfielders, we have to bring Henry on and move Ayer into the holding midfield role, which he's not played for, what, 3 years, 4 years?
I played in the game and his head's away there.
You know, he's played two seasons of Brendan, this season and last season, as a centre-half. The season before that at Kilmarnock as a centre-half. So that's 3 seasons as a centre-half minimum he's played. And as you say, he was too busy being in a bad mood about it. So it was quite challenging. You know, I think Motherwell thought they had a real chance at that point.
I thought that Edward responded well. He started working hard to get the ball and to be involved in the game. And the run he had that led to the goal was quite brilliant, really.
It was. So, actually, when I watched it on the telly, the free kick was further out than at the game I thought it was.
Mm-hmm. It was funny because Anthony said, Edward's going to take it. And I said, oh, I'm not sure about that. He says he scored goals for the under-21s in France. And I said, was that no Moussa? And he said, no, he's done it as well. And he walloped it straight in the corner.
Because the thing that was getting me agitated about it is Clancy drew the white line on the pitch, and then the Motherwell player stood in front of it.
Uh-huh.
And he did nothing about it.
No, I know. It's weak refereeing.
It is very weak refereeing. But yeah, top corner, that's it, game over.
Yeah. And then the next goal was a lovely goal too. It was a bit clumsy the way it was set up, but he took it very well.
He did. So 4-1.
I actually thought James Forrest, when he got the captain's armband, he began to come back into the game. he drifted out of it a wee bit, but he started to work hard and he tried to impose himself on the game.
Yeah, I think he's been a bit... I mean, I know he scored a great goal against St John's the other week, but I think he's been a bit off the pace compared to what he's been of late. So, overall, 8 points clear, 9-10 goals clear. Pretty comfortable. We've got Tynecastle Wednesday night.
That's a hard game. That'll be the game. The next, I'm saying to Arian, if they can go to the end of the month, the next month unbeaten, or if they can win their games the next month, I'll have wrapped everything up, I think.
Well, it would have done, because in the next, you know, obviously there's one night in terms of games, there's one night left in February, and then so we've got Tynecastle, then Easter Road in the Cup.
I think that'll be a hard game.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because the Hibs are a team that think they can beat them.
Yeah, particularly
Easter Road.
Yeah, particularly Easter Road. Although Lennon seemed to be able to specifically deal with Celtic, and you know, this isn't Lennon in charge. So we'll see. And then we've got Aberdeen.
At home.
At home, and then at the end of the month we get Rangers at home.
The Palace fans,
yeah. So we'll see. But after the Motherwell game, Brendan Rodgers was interviewed and he was asked about the Motherwell and what they did. But on Radio Scotland, did you catch at the end of the Radio Scotland interview when he was asked about the Leicester job?
I did. We were back in the cabin that time.
So what did you think of his answer?
I should take Anthony. He never answered that question. He avoided answering the question, which would indicate it would be just as easy to say I'm not interested.
See, I read someone online today who said, good on Brendan for not answering the question. And I thought, no, because the easiest thing in the world, as you say, was to say, I know why you got to ask that question. Because, you know, as we're recording this tonight, Brendan is 6-1 on for the Leicester job, right? So any journalist not asking that question would give, it's not worth it. He's not a journalist. He's got to ask the question. But the easiest thing in the world would be to say, I know why you got to ask that question, but I'm Celtic manager, I'm very happy here, and I'm just... Do you know, even if he's considering it in the summer, you can still answer it by saying, I know why you got to ask that question, but I'm Celtic manager and I'm focusing on the two trophies that we are still in.
Well, I saw a statement tonight, someone said that he'd said he had to, his focus was Celtic, on, I think it was the BBC website. I thought that really wasn't what he said last night. He didn't answer that question at all. But I was going to say, listening to the interview, I thought he was waffling away about that whole business of Motherwell's behaviour and a lack of sportsmanship, and I thought, what's done is done, let it go.
Yeah, but you know what, if you are a perfectionist and you've set targets for the number of goals you concede at home and things like that, it would irritate you.
Yeah, he did make that point that the players have a pride in their own performance, and I was talking about Willie stay after the game. I think Willie was talking about that, about how the players would be upset that a goal had been scored against them, even though it was scored under dubious circumstances.
Yeah, so I can understand that. Now, there's a lot of chat tonight, even more so, as we're recording this on Monday night. There's a lot of chat, certainly amongst the press down in the Midlands, that Leicester have approached Celtic today for permission to speak to Brendan Rodgers. So, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'd be very disappointed if you left just now. I mean, I heard you and Lawrence and people talking earlier on in the season about the fact that he wasn't going to be here past the summer. And I think I'd got that into my head, accepted that, and assumed that Celtic would be doing due diligence about how they would replace him. But I'd be very disappointed if they left just now in the middle of a league championship campaign with a potential for a treble. I was also with us, part of me wonders, what does he think he's going to achieve at Leicester?
But the problem he's got, right, so he's won two trebles in Scotland. People in England think Scottish football is rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think they're going to think of Scottish football if he wins three, and Brendan Rodgers if he wins three trebles?
I don't know. I mean, I really don't give any thought to what they think down in England. My only concern is the Celtic.
Yeah, but if you're Brendan Rodgers and you aspire to be, if I quickly look at the English Premiership, right, and I'm not trying to punt him, I mean, obviously I want Brendan to stay, I'm just trying to, I'm just being realistic about the circumstances of the situation. Liverpool, he's never going to go back to Liverpool, right? So that's by the by. Man City, well, Pep Guardiola's here, so he's not going to get that, and they wouldn't go for him. Tottenham, well, you know, there's rumour, chat was that Pochettino was going to leave Tottenham to go to Man United in the summer, right? That might not happen now, but even if he did, my gut feel is that Tottenham wouldn't go recruiting a British manager.
No.
It would be a foreigner. Arsenal, well, they've just got a relatively new manager. Man United, they're not going to appoint a former Liverpool manager, regardless. Chelsea, I just can't see Chelsea. There's nothing about Chelsea's track record that would illustrate that they would go for a British manager.
Not in recent years, I agree with you, but my only thought was that he does have history with Chelsea.
Right, so say we say Chelsea's a 25% chance. So that's
if Chelsea came in for him, I could see the point.
Right, so
because with a budget that they might offer him and the bright lights and everything, there's a possibility of competing for those top places. But I don't see that happening at Leicester.
Well, I'm just going through the table for that reason, though. So there's maybe a 10% chance that Chelsea would look at him. Right? Personally, I think it's a 0% chance.
Right. Neither do I.
Right, okay, so we're now at seventh place, Watford. I could see Watford going for someone of Brendan's level, but I think Watford are currently punching above their weight in seventh place is better than they will ever do. They've got a rubbishy stadium. They're like the fourth best team in London or something like that. So I just can't see Watford. Plus, he wouldn't go to Watford because he's been at Watford.
Aye.
Right, so that rules Watford out. Next one, Wolves.
They've got a good manager.
Yeah, so it's not going to be Wolves. Next one's West Ham.
They've got a good manager as well.
Plus, I don't know if I would take the West Ham job because they've got Bampot owners.
Mm-hmm.
Next one, Bournemouth.
They've got a good manager.
Plus, if he goes, and he's British, so they might go back for a British manager, would you really... Bournemouth are a small, even smaller club.
They are a very small club.
Yeah. Next club's Everton.
Oh, no.
Well, they're not going to get a former Liverpool manager for a start.
No.
Next club is Leicester City. And Leicester are on a non-winning run of nine games.
Mm-hmm.
Leicester have spent most of the last three seasons in the top eight. So we've just gone in the top 12 clubs in England in terms of the league table. And the first one that we've got to, that he would go to them and they would go for him, is Leicester. So if he's looking for a move down to the English Premiership, and then four places below him is Newcastle, which is probably the next biggest, which is also a big team.
Mm-hmm. Although they've got a dreadful record and I know there's problems with their owners, I would say they're a bigger club than Leicester.
They are a bigger club than Leicester, but they've got a Bampot owner.
Exactly.
And would you go and take it? So if you then look at it, the top...
Who's the owner at Leicester now, though?
Benitez.
Who's really committed to it? He died.
Mick Ashley's the owner at Newcastle.
No, I'm talking about Leicester.
Sorry, Leicester. Oh, his son. His son is really committed to it.
Is he really? Because I remember, and there's no comparison between them, but Gretna, when they had that guy, Miles, what's his name? He was really committed to it and they were doing really well. I know that a lot of folk would argue they were paying over the odds and it was a paper moon affair. But as soon as he was ill and was likely to die, the son pulled the plug on them.
Yeah, well, this one's different. But so the point I'm trying to make is to try and be realistic about it. And much as, you know, Leicester, for even though they've won the Premiership in the last couple of seasons, you know, the last three seasons or whatever it is, Leicester are not a big club, right? But if you fancy going, if you're Brendan and you fancy being in managing in the Premiership, we've just gone through, and if you go a few places below Leicester, you know, there's Burnley and Crystal Palace, who've got Roy Hodgson. In the top 15 clubs, Leicester's the only one that we've just gone through a process of elimination that would take him and that would be worthwhile for him to go to. In the top 50. So if people ask, and I'm not wanting to go, but if people ask why Leicester, there's the reason why Leicester. Because if you want to be in the Premiership, that's the biggest club that he would be able to get.
Well, it'd have to be about just managing in the Premiership, because I can't see him managing. I'm not saying he wouldn't be a success at Leicester, but success at Leicester isn't winning things. It's staying up in that top echelon. The fact that he won the championship was one of the great miracles of sport.
Yeah, I know. I'm just making the point. He's not going to go. There's no club bigger than Leicester that he's going to go. That he's going to get a chance to go to in the Premiership. So then somebody listening to this might turn around and say, "Exactly, that's why he's not going to go." And you know, it'd be brilliant. Well, it'd be brilliant if he doesn't go. But
I have Chris Sutton saying tonight he will go, but he thinks he shouldn't.
I don't think he should go. But if he wants to manage in the Premiership. The problem we've got as a club is that Leicester have now just created a vacancy, and through a process of elimination, we've just arrived at Leicester as the biggest club that he can get.
Probably. I mean, if you look over his track record, I know he got a sack at Liverpool, but at Celtic too, for all this avowed love for the club and saying last summer how he'd never been happier in his life and things like that, there does seem to be a degree of discontent about him. Maybe if we'd been more successful in Europe, that might not be the case, but he's part of the cause of that, because I don't think he's flexible in the way he sees European football. I think he's a romantic when it comes to European football. Whereas Lennon was a pragmatist.
Yeah, but I still think you can be a romantic about it and be pragmatic about how you're going to set your team up. He was pragmatic against Valencia away.
Do you not think that was partly because they let him?
No, I think he went with a very different system.
I think that if we had gone there with a two-goal lead rather than a two-goal deficit, their approach to the game would have been markedly different.
Aye, but his approach was markedly different. He played a completely different system to the system he plays week in, week out, and the system he's played most of his European games. He played a very different system.
Actually, I've thought sometimes that the problem doesn't lie with the system, the problem lies with the lack of quality in terms of the players, that we have players who will make mistakes when the pressure builds against superior players.
Yeah, I think it's a mentality thing.
It's not just mentality, it's to do with ability.
Yeah, but I actually think some of them have got better ability than they show in European football.
Yeah, but we've talked before about how I've watched amateur teams doing their drills and their warm-ups, and they do all the things that professional teams do. But when the game starts and people are pressing them, they don't have the technique to carry out these quick-passing drills that they've been doing in practice. Now, when you watch Barcelona or Bayern Munich at training, the pace of the which they practice is much faster than ours. You know, I always watch this from Lennox Town and Celtic TV, and it never strikes me that they're under tremendous pressure when they're training. He says they do. He says they do high intensity training, and possibly in a Scottish context it is, but it's clearly not at the level that the really great teams do it. So when you go on the pitch and these teams put you under pressure, it's your technique that lets you down. Plus, perhaps, as you say, their self-belief. So there's a sort of glass ceiling.
Yeah, and so my things about Brendan that I've noticed, I mean, you know, if you think about it, Martin O'Neill verbally accepted the Leeds job at the end of his third season and then changed his mind. But the thing about Brendan is he has two or three times now in the last, you know, twice last season, towards the end of last season and once this season, done a one-to-one interview with an English-based journalist in an English-based paper. You know, one of the, like, Ollie Holt, and I can't remember who the other ones were, like, main English-based journalists.
Yeah, right. See, I don't look at the papers, so...
But just before we won the league, just before we won the cup last season, and just before we were, and the day we won the league cup this season, so he did one-to-one interviews with a big-hitting, widely read journalists in the main, you know, in the English-based media, talking about the glass ceiling in Scottish football that he's got as Celtic manager. Because you can only spend so much money and you can only go so far and you can dominate domestically and then you go to Europe and it's such a gulf between them. And that's, you know, that's part of the sort of, you don't need to be a massive genius at reading between the lines of, that's Brendan has organised that one-to-one interview directly himself through his agents. He's not given that type of interview to Scottish-based journalists. And he talks about how he's got a glass ceiling in Scotland and how great the English Premiership is. You don't need to be a massive genius to read between the lines and think, right, okay, he's reminding everybody down south that he still exists and still fancies managing down there. You don't need to be a genius to work that out.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, after everything that happened in the summer, I was wondering what we were going to do in the transfer window, and we go in and bring in guys on six-month loans. Again, if you can't read between the lines, then you're obviously... I can't get whether the people who, you know, I've read a few people online saying things like, oh, I can't believe we signed these guys only on six-month loan deals. It's as if they're trying to annoy Brendan to get him to leave. Can you not, you know, if you're needing somebody to spell it out, then obviously you're needing somebody to punch you in the face with the writing on your knuckles to be able to work that out. It's fairly obvious why you've signed guys on only six-month loan deals.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately. I mean, it'd be brilliant if we... I mean, fantastic if we get to stay. I'm just... There's nothing... The only evidence there is that he's not. And there's no evidence that he is. Unfortunately. And as you pointed out, when you get asked the question, are you taking, you know, Leicester interested in you? He didn't answer in a way that made me think, that people that give me any evidence to the contrary.
I mean, I'm looking at tweets here and Twitter. Some folks that we know, like Richard McGinley and Harry Brady and people like that, commenting on the possibility of him leaving. And spoke saying he won't leave mid-season, he's an honourable guy. And I thought, well, the only way that's going to happen is if Leicester agree to it. Because if Leicester come in for him, he would need to do some fairly smooth talking to get him to accept going in the summer.
Well, I mean, his agent spoke to Leicester last summer. If you go on Google and look up and look in what the Midlands press were saying in June of last year, they were all talking about Puel getting fired and Leicester appointing Brendan Rodgers, right? That was in June of last year. And then I always remember seeing it. There was a thing on the 25th of June from somebody down there saying the Leicester board have decided to stick with Puel and put Brendan on hold. Right? Now, a bit presumptive that he could be put on hold, but anyway, that's
does he think of that?
That's the way that they put it, right? So, that's them. That's up to them. But the thing I can't work out, though, is they surely would work out... They're not going to get relegated, right? And if they want Brendan Rodgers, which he's 6-1 on, and that only happens when some, when you know there's lots of chat in a certain area. If they want Brendan Rodgers, and they spoke to him last summer, I'm very surprised that they didn't just try and stick with Puel to the end of the season. If that's what they want. Because I just can't see... I just can't see Brendan leaving before the season's over, particularly this close. You know, with, you know, what is it? There only are 13 games to the end of the treble.
Exactly.
I just can't see it. And surely they must be able to work that out. You'd have thought.
Well, I'm trying to think. There was a number of English clubs last year shed their manager and they allowed the youth coach or someone that had to take over to see them through to the end of the season. And then they made a new appointment. And it was quite rare for the youth coach to get the job. So, I mean, even Leicester did that when Claudio left. That reserve guy, the guy who ran the youth academy, he took them to the end of the season and then they appointed Puel, didn't they?
Yeah. Sure.
So they could do that again, come to some arrangement with Celtic and with Brendan Rodgers at the end of the season, that he would come as manager. But who knows? I mean, it's up in the air, so it is, really.
Anyway, I mean, I just can't see, hopefully I'm not wrong here, but I really, really can't see him going before the end of the season. It would just, I can see him creating an, I can see why he would want, you know, hopefully he'll stay, right, but I just don't see it, and I can see why he would leave in the summer, you know, if he's won a holy trinity of trebles, I can really see why. Look, I've done everything I can, I've won three trebles, I can't make my impact in Europe, and I've got a job offer in England, you know, I'm going to go. I can see that.
Did that win that third European Cup? You could have bigger house when I'm leaving. Better than win three Champions Leagues. So, you know, you could understand him leaving then.
Yeah.
And you could understand when Guardiola left Barcelona. At the time he did, he'd achieved wonders.
Yeah.
And all you could hope for more, but you could see that it might not happen, and then your reputation is diminished.
Yeah, but you can only do so much.
The season and win three trebles, he would be a legend. He could go away then.
Yeah, I just can't see a set of circumstances where he could leave now and not ruin his reputation amongst the Celtic fans. So, I just can't see. I mean, the only thing is, obviously, if he's desperate to get to the Premiership, I'm not saying he is or he isn't.
Well, what happened to this domestic bliss that he'd found? I mean, it's not 18 months, well, it's not even a year since he was telling the media here how he'd found happiness. So you're wondering.
A £100 million spending budget can make you very happy in your job as well if you're a football manager.
He was talking about happiness in his job. He was talking about peace and domestic happiness and how he loved it and all this nonsense.
I'm just saying people change. People, you know, things can be, people change their opinion.
Yeah, but his experience down there hadn't been a good one.
Sure, you had a good time at Swansea. You had a good time at Liverpool for half the time.
You got the sack.
Most managers do down there. Anyway, you know, what will be. There's no point in getting your knickers in a twist. If he leaves, he leaves. If he stays, he stays. There's nothing you and I can do to change it.
But as I said to you, my concern is I have no idea who they could get to replace him.
No, you know, I've heard quite a few. It's interesting because I'd heard some things about Stevie Clark, who's looking different. After Christmas, but somebody sent me a text just like the week before the Rangers game saying Stevie Clark and his wife don't particularly like it up here, and they just bought a new house down near Ascot.
Mm-hmm.
And then like 3 days later he has his criticism of how shite the West of Scotland is.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's no coincidence. somebody who would know sends me a text to say he's not that happy up here, and then 3 days later hears a rant about how crap it is up here.
Even when I was thinking about it, you think around the Scottish context, he was clearly the next best coach in the league. Lennon, I think, has burnt his boats long since with the Celtic. I really do. I don't see him coming back.
No, I don't see him coming back. The only caveat I would put to that is we get to the end of the season, we win them, we're at 8 in a row. I think it'll be... I would be stunned if we made a Roddy Dyla type appointment. I think it'll be a conservative appointment, because the most important thing will be nobody wants to be the person who blew the 10.
Yes, but who would you get? I mean, my point about Clark was, when you actually thought about it, as well as seeing a successful manager or coach at Kilmarnock, you saw one who wasn't that successful at West Bromwich Albion.
Well, relatively speaking, he was. Because we're at West Brom this season.
Huh?
We're at West Brom this season. The point being, people get fired in England for finishing 14th, and then actually the club was punching well above its weight at 14th, and it's actually a mid-table championship team.
Did they not go down when he was a manager?
I think they did, but they're West Brom. They're a Euro club. They go up and down. Plus, if Celtic fans whinge about
the guy who picked them up.
If Celtic fans whinge about Peter Lawwell, they should have a look at the guy who's in charge of the West Brom transfer budget. He's worse. So I really don't know. I really don't know who we get as a replacement. Fortunately, because I think his time in football has passed. Hopefully I'm not proved wrong. Fortunately, I think Davy Moyes' ship has sailed as somebody that we would consider. As far as I understand, we have known all season that Brendan's leaving at the end of the season, and we are going to have some form of director of football type person and a coach coming in. And who that is, I have no idea. Absolutely none.
You realise, of course, it just ruins Anthony's evening.
Why?
Because he likes a manager. The idea of a director of football and a coach is anathema to him.
Well, he doesn't like the way that teams are set up in Germany, Spain.
No, he doesn't. No.
And England.
He's a strong manager.
And England.
Ah, but that's the way it is.
That's the way the world is.
I know, and Fergus saw that years ago.
I mean, when you say director of football, I think some people have a fixed idea. For some directors of football in England are just marginally more powerful than Lee Congerton is. They're basically just in charge of recruitment. Other directors of football are in charge of recruitment. It's the equivalent of Lee Congerton and Tommy Burns combined into one role when Tommy Burns was in charge of the academy. You know, quite a lot of them, that's the sort of way that they are, that they are in charge of the football. You know, they do what Peter Lawwell does in terms, and Michael Nicholson do in terms of the negotiation of deals. Mm-hmm. And then there's a few that are even, you know, it's a bigger role again, where they set the football strategy for the whole club, and so they pick a manager who can fit into that strategy, so that managers can come and go, and the club's not too disrupted. And it then means you can sign big name players. You know, you can sign players, and it doesn't matter if the manager comes and goes, because that player will fit with the new manager, because the new manager is picked based on that strategy. So I don't quite know what level we were. I don't think we will be at a level of director of football like Jock Brown type. Like, I don't think it'll be something like that.
Years ago, though, about when Lyon were on that 9-in-a-row run, or whatever it was in France, there's several managers, including the guy who went to Rangers. What was his name again?
I can't remember his name now. I can see his face, but yeah.
The idea there was that the manager was told, there are the players, work with them.
Oh, I remember going on holiday and speaking to someone who, he was a Lyon fan, big Lyon fan, and I was, Paul Le Guin, that was it.
Paul Le Guin.
And it was just as Rangers recruit Paul Le Guin, and I said that about Rangers recruiting Paul Le Guin. The guy had said he's okay, but Lyon is like a Formula One racing car. You can, as long as you've got a half competent driver, the car will race around the track and finish in the top five. And that was the setup. And so we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. Who knows? As I say, I'm not going to get my knickers in a twist. I resigned myself in September, August time, to the fact that Brendan was leaving at the end of this season. You know, who knew, you know, so the most important thing was then what happened in September was Brendan seemed to then start enjoying himself again. If you look at our play, you know, the reason we're not more points ahead is our form in August and the beginning of September. We had a couple of blips since then, but principally, the team's playing great. And we're on track for a holy trinity of trebles. And that's all that bothers me, is that we get to the end of the season, win the league, and then we'll just review things then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you change it? But before then, we've got the Hearts game on Wednesday night, so that's always a difficult one. What's your thoughts on going to Tynecastle?
Well, I think it will be a difficult one. I think it will be a physical match. And I think they'll need to be prepared to win their personal battles. You know, they'll obviously target Brown, they'll target various individuals to try and make sure they don't play to their full potential. So it's up to them to win those battles. And if they do, they'll probably win the match. But Hearts are not an easy team to beat. I thought they're a great team, but they can mix it. So it'll be an interesting game. And I think the game in the weekend against the Hibs, it'll be a difficult game, and a lot of it might depend on how they do on Wednesday.
So it's difficult to pick what the team might be, because we know pretty well who's fit for the goalkeeper and the defence.
Mm-hmm.
So what would your goalkeeper and defence be for Wednesday night?
That would be Bain and Tolian, probably Aher and Boyata. I don't know someone that's just fit. And Kieran Tierney.
Okay, so that's that end of the park, because we know who's fit. Top end of the park, if we pick the sort of front three, who you going with in the front three?
I think I'd play Edouard, because he's got two terrific goals yesterday. He played well, he deserves another run out. I think James Forrest will play, and he'll play Sinclair. He will play Sinclair.
Okay, so that's that. Sinclair's actually got a decent record at Tynecastle.
That's a very decent record, aye.
So that's the two ends of the park. So the challenge is, not quite sure who's fit.
Brown will play.
Yeah, so who are we going to play? Who's the three in the middle of the pitch? So Brown will play because he's back from suspension. Who's the other two? Who do you think?
If Beattle's fit, he might play Beattle. And he might play the boy. He doesn't have much else. If that's 4-3-3, you know, obviously, you might regard Forrest as a midfield player rather than a forward.
No, but I'm thinking 4-3-3.
There's nobody else. When you look about them, who else has he got? Mikey Johnson.
Yeah, but to play, basically what we're looking at is Brown and somebody else to be a number 10 and somebody to be a number 8, effectively.
Well, they don't have anybody more other than the young lad.
Would you consider playing Burke or Weir as number 10?
I don't think Burke is that good a player. I think he's very quick and he's strong. I don't think he's a subtle player. We haven't seen enough of Weir to see whether or not he can play a number 10. I don't know if he can. I don't think he'd be a better number 10 than Ewan Henderson.
So you would play... So say... I'm not sure... Say McGregor's fit,
play McGregor if he was fit.
Yeah.
I mean, I would play McGregor if he was fit all the time, because I think he's a really good player. And I mean, if Rogic was fit, he'd play Rogic. But these guys are not fit.
Yeah, so you're going to play Beaton, Brown and Henderson?
I think you'd have to.
Beaton was only cramped, so surely you'd expect, because he's not hardly played.
Yeah, hopefully.
For a year, so you'd expect that Beaton will be back. And so what's your prediction for the score?
They're down to the bare bones.
Oh, they certainly are.
Unless he thought perhaps by playing Johnny Hayes somewhere. I don't really know where he would play him. He's either a winger or he's a fullback. I think he can make a decent fullback. I've said that a few weeks ago, and somebody can have after me, but I remember Andy Lynch made himself into a decent fullback when he wasn't getting the game up front. It didn't happen right away, but he learned how to play the position, and he was an effective player. I remember Tom McAdam turning himself into a very effective centre-back when everybody saw him only as a striker. So you can go back if you've got the intelligence and the ability. But I don't know if that's necessarily for Wednesday night.
No.
He may play Ahar in the midfield if Simonovic is fit.
Yeah, because we had the sight of the lesser spotted Hendry playing on Sunday.
I felt a wee bit sorry for him when he came on Sunday, because I think there's a widespread feeling he's not going to make it. And I thought the circumstances were quite difficult to bring him on in a game after the way it turned like that. I thought he might have actually changed his mind about who the substitute
was. I was surprised that it wasn't Lustig coming on.
So was I.
You know, when you saw that the players had sort of lost it, I thought, bring on Lustig, play him in the middle. He's a calmer, but he's an older, more experienced player. He should be able to calm everything down.
Actually, I would play him as a centre back now rather than as a fullback. Because I don't think what we're looking for in a fullback he offers us anymore. But more than once he's played well in the centre of defence, where he's less exposed.
So what's the score going to be?
I have no idea.
Oh, give us a go.
I think it's a big, big game to win. I think if Celtic were to win on Wednesday night, it would give a serious dunt to our rivals' ambitions. I think they're fairly confident they're able to deal with, I think it's, is it Dundee? I think they play Dundee.
Yep.
So they're at home against Dundee, and they're the greatest team since sliced bread.
Did you see my tweets that I put up this about Billy Dodds on Sunday?
Well, I was talking about Billy Dodds. I was talking about the coach of Hamilton, who was inspired by what he saw yesterday.
The reason I mentioned about the things about you saying about the greatest team ever.
Oh, I saw about the Arfield's not a goal machine.
No, it was Ryan Jack.
Ryan Jack, yeah.
I mean, I only heard like 5 minutes during their game. I was out in the car, went back in, then went out to go to our game and heard them talking, as I was going from the house to their game. The one thing that Jack has added to his game this season is goals. And that was actually, he made that comment because they were talking about, Neil McCann was talking about Ryan Jack's now being asked to push on a bit more by Stevie Gerrard. This was before Jack scored the goal. So at that point, when Billy Dodds was saying the one thing he's really added, it wasn't like in the last 2 weeks, the one thing he's really added to his game this season has been goals. Well, at that point, he'd scored 2 goals all season.
Yeah,
I mean,
he scored twice yesterday.
And then he said, at the end after the game, saying about Morelos not being in. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing that Stevie Gerrard would be really, really pleased about, because Rangers now they tend to be clinical even when they're playing without Morelos.
Yeah.
That's the first time. In six games of no Morelos that they've won.
Uh-huh. I know.
And then the final thing, I mean, I only heard them say a handful of things. The final thing was, Rangers have been ruthless since the break, an absolutely clinical streak, just brushing teams aside. Uh-huh. He obviously then thought about that for a second and thought, oh, last week they didn't win. Because he then said, well, certainly since the St Johnstone game. So since the St Johnstone game, which was just last weekend, they played one game in the cup against Kilmarnock where Kilmarnock should have had a penalty and the keeper shouldn't have been sent off, and one game against Hamilton. So basically, in 2 games this week, Rangers have played really well.
They lost at Kilmarnock in the league, and they lost, then they drew with Kilmarnock in the cup. You know, since the turn of the year.
Well, just in the last 4 games, they've won 2, drawn 2.
Yeah. Aye.
They drew with Kilmarnock Cup, drew with St Johnstone at home, beat Kilmarnock in the Cup, beat Hamilton away. You know.
That's just been so.
The thing that gets me, it's not about a pro Rangers thing or anything. He gets paid money for that.
Aye.
And Peyton Lee just says what comes into his head at that moment. No research, no analysis or anything. So, don't sound like Billy Dodds. Give me a score, Lackey.
When did any British commentator, any British footballer, ever really do any research into the things that they say?
Oh, no. Give me a score.
I've no idea.
Oh, you got to get... Just pick one.
1-0 will do me fine.
Right.
Seriously, if they come out of there 1-0, I'll be jubilant. Because it's a difficult ground. And it's a good atmosphere, and their fans get behind them. And unless Celtic can put them to the sword early doors, they stay behind them.
I did speak to a Hearts fan last week who said that they're really a one-man team this season. If Nath Smith's not playing, they're not very good. So, that gives me a bit of hope as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he is playing or not, is or isn't playing. But certainly that was the feedback from the Hearts fan.
But this is definitely a stand-up-and-be-counted game.
Oh, absolutely, and I think at this stage of the season, this is when, I remember hearing a thing about the top teams in England, that their whole training and fitness regime is geared up for all, obviously not us at the moment, all their first team players being at their fittest in March, April and May, because those are the 3 months when you win all the trophies.
Well, that's a concern, you see. I've seen somebody flag that up, and it does give me reason, grounds for pause, is that we have an awful lot of important players injured. Now, does that say something about the training regime? Because I don't remember any of them. Let me think. Are any of them been victims of exceedingly bad tackles? There's mainly pulls and strains and things like that. You wonder, when you say that about they're geared to getting their best players on the pitch when the fag end of the season comes. We've not got that. We're running in the walking wounded at the moment.
But the point, it sort of reinforces your point of this being a massive game, because actually at the moment we as fans are saying this, are saying, you know, Kilmarnock win was a massive win because Rangers had dropped points and it pushed us a further 2 points clear. Then the Motherwell win was a massive win because it just prevented them from gaining any ground on us.
Yes.
And now we're saying going to Tynecastle. I mean, for me, pretty much when you get to this stage and there's 10, 11 games left, every game is absolutely enormous because every game is just one step closer to the point where the next game's the winner.
Aye.
And so you're really looking, you know, in the last wee while, I've been looking ahead at the three key games for me, certainly in the league trophy, are Tynecastle, Aberdeen at home, Rangers at home.
Mm-hmm.
If you win those three games, you're looking at then getting to the split where they're having a debate when they play the Celtic Rangers game at Ibrox, because if we are, say, which wouldn't be, if Celtic and Rangers match each other's results for the rest of this, for between now and the split, with the exception of we beat them at Celtic Park, we're 11 points clear.
Yeah.
With 5 games to go.
Aye.
Which means if the first game after the split is at Ibrox and we win it, we are 14 points clear with 12 points left. We win the league at Ibrox.
Right.
Which then means if they make it the second game after the split and we match each other's points, then we will be 11 points clear with 12 points left. And if we
draw
or win at Ibrox, we've won the league.
Mm-hmm.
So
we've got to get past these other games first.
Yeah, but that's what makes these three games so important, because these three games are the games that take us to the game before the split, minimum 11 points clear. If we win these three games...
If we win our games up until we play them and we beat them, it will burst our bubble.
Well, if we win our games between now and then and beat them, I think we might win the league before the split.
Yes.
Well,
we'll see.
We'll turn that around from the slight negative chat around the Brendan stuff, where I've had, as we've been talking, I've had loads of texts from people saying Leicester are massively briefing the Midlands and English press that they are going for Brendan.
That's a wee bit presumptuous.
Well, that's what clubs do, because then they're trying to create momentum.
It's pressure on the manager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what they do. Anyway, nothing we can do about it. No point in getting knickers in a twist.
The Celtic say no.
The world of modern football, it comes down to if he wants to do it or not.
Under contract.
Aye, yeah.
What if Celtic said you can go to the end of the season?
I think that's what we have said.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see, we'll see.
But as I say, my only concern about it is I can't think who will come in. If I could see clearly that we had even someone in our background who was a very effective coach and could take the first team, I would still think we could win everything. Because we'll get better players than everybody else. I mean, when Strachan chucked it and they brought in Tony Mowbray, when Lennon came in, right away, I know they lost a cup tie, but he won all these other games. Remember?
Well, yeah, what will be. No point in us getting a knickers in a twist.
No. And we'll be disappointed if we don't get a treble and 10 in a row.
Exactly. So with that, I will say, Lucky Moore, thanks very much.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks.
Sunshine in your smile.
So as you can tell, we recorded that before Brendan Rodgers' departure, but as my phone was going red hot during the recording of the podcast, was various people giving me bits of gossip through, and after I recorded it last night, I was a bit concerned that it was a bit too negative and a bit too presumptive that at some point Brendan would definitely leave in the summer and possibly now, and also a bit too negative about, well, he's off, so that's it. And I was going to chop out a bit about Brendan possibly going to England, but hey, it's I've left it where it is. As I said in the podcast, every single signal that came out in the last 12 months was that Brendan was off, and there's no joy in saying I told you so. It's very, very disappointing, but he's gone, and really, you know, I'm not going to meet him ever again, probably, so there's no point in wasting energy and getting annoyed. We've got the Hearts game, we get Neil Lennon now, the Celtic manager. The king is dead. Long live the king. We've got the Hearts game at Tynecastle. Then we're at Easter Road. And then we're playing Aberdeen. And then we are just a handful of games of winning, away from winning the treble. So, hail, hail. Good night. And God bless.
Bring me sunshine. Bring me love. Bring me sunshine. In your smile. Bring me laughter. All the while, in this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine. Bring